It's never boring, different every day.
Did you ever feel anxiety of doing something wrong?
That, humor is also really important because, you've got to have fun while you're doing your job as well.
Hi, welcome to another episode of the DNA of RMA. Today I'm going to talk to Simon Carriage, an RMA I've only heard a lot about. And even though I was sick and my voice sounds horrible, sorry for that, we talked really long about different paths of becoming what you want to be, anxiety, and the most important soft skills for RMAs. So have fun and enjoy it.
The DNA of RMA, the podcast from the Corps of Research Management and Administration.
So, hello, welcome to the second episode of the DNA of RMA. I'm so happy today that I have a guest. His name is Simon Carriage. He lives in Kent in Southeast England and worked in many different university positions as an RMA. I think the last one was as the Director of Research Services in Kent. Is that right?
Absolutely correct, yeah.
Cool, okay. Hi.
Hi, lovely to meet you, Hannah.
It's nice to meet you too. I was a bit nervous because everyone from the RMA community I talked to seemed to know you somehow in some way, and so I was wondering, like, who are you interviewing today, or is the community so small?
Probably the community is very small. Either that or I'm known for telling my bad jokes. I wouldn't.
Okay, that's cool. Are we just going to start right away with the first question? Because I found out by now that it seems like a hard question for RMAs. Could you maybe explain your profession to us? Like, what were you doing, or what was the main content of your work?
Okay, so yeah, that's interesting. So RMA itself is not even an agreed term. So Research Management Administration, if you go to America, for example, they call it Research Administration. If you go to Africa, then it's Research and Innovation Management. So we don't even have a sort of an international agreed term. I also don't think we have an international agreed scope. In general, people would say, oh, maybe I work in pre-award or in post-award. Post-award is relatively easy to understand. It's to do with the finances of a research project, but also maybe being directly involved in the research project as maybe managing the research project. So sort of doing the management administration tasks for a principal investigator. Pre-award, I guess, is more helping people get the project in the first place, and that's where I started. There's also what some people call pre-award or maybe researcher development, which is more generally helping raise awareness about research for researchers, so sort of upskilling them, so not specifically supporting an individual project proposal, but maybe helping give them information about open access or research data management, which they can then use in the future for a project proposal. So those kind of pre-award and post-award areas would be the main areas, but then you include other things like research ethics, which sometimes is separate and sometimes included, or research student management, so looking after postgraduate researchers. Quite often there's a separate graduate school, but sometimes that's incorporated in. And so people may feel, if they work in the graduate school, that their identity is a research manager, or they might feel that it's in a graduate research supporter. Again, not that that's a known term. I mentioned innovation before, so quite often research and innovation, so working with companies and working with research impact or public engagement, sometimes those things are incorporated within RMA, but sometimes it's separate. So, for example, in the UK, we have an association of research managers, but there's a separate association for people who deal with working with businesses, working with companies. But there is an overlap, of course. It's a bit of a Venn diagram. And then you get sort of more general things like research information management systems. Sometimes they're looked after by IT or information services, sometimes by the research office. I mentioned open access already, so scholarly communication, that sort of support. And then research strategy, research assessment. I mean, basically anything with research in it that's not actually doing the research itself is kind of what we do. And now I can't remember what the question was.
It was actually about your profession, But I guess you did like everything a bit, or?
So I guess I've probably done all of those things that I mentioned. So I started off doing the pre-awards part, so helping people with that. And then as part of that, I sort of developed some local systems. So that included a database, because my background is computing. Okay. So I developed a database of here's proposals being submitted, and then they become projects, and are they funded? Also then looking after database of research outputs, so publications, journal articles, and so on. This was before the university had an institutional repository, so it wasn't a record of the publication, but a record of the metadata. So it was this journal, these authors, this date, and so on. So those things together, the sort of the project and the publications, could be used to make an annual report. So, you know, here's everything that the university's done over the year. So that's kind of those areas I started on. Then we incorporated research finance. When I started, I was sort of the second in charge of the department of two people, so the most junior person. And this was at the University of Sunderland in the northeast of England. So we had that. The interesting thing that we had, first of all, was we did a merger with International Development, which was mainly to do with student exchange programs. But the other thing that they did was they booked all of the international travel for staff at the institution. And so we shared an office with them and finally became merged. And so that meant that we then knew about all the international travel that our researchers had done and where they'd been. And so we could sort of say, well, actually, this person is looking for a partner in Germany, but we know some people who've been to Germany recently, so they've probably got some contacts. So we could then sort of, you know, put them together. So that was the kind of proposal support area. Then other things got added. So we added in the research school, we added in innovation, we added in ethics. So by the time I'd kind of finished at Sunderland, I was, I guess, second in charge still of a group of about, I think, 45 people at the end of the day. It was quite extensive. Then that was split up. I was then heading up just the research support side of things, so research and graduate. And then I moved to Kent to do more or less the same role, but Kent's a much larger institution in terms of research activity. So same role, but bigger job, I guess.
Gosh, okay.
And that's when I added the scholarly communication to it. So that was something that I developed at Kent. So I guess the thing is, it's more or less what you make it. It's a very interesting sort of profession, because although we've got core parts, there are different aspects which you can sort of add or move around. I suppose that's like other professions.
It's so interesting. It feels like you can just individually adapt your profession how you want it to be. It's
exactly.
Interesting. Because actually my next question was where students can turn to if they want to like become an RMA. Does it make sense to have like a certain degree like finance or management or?
No, that's interesting. So at the moment there is no sort of one route into research management. You can't do an undergraduate course in research management, although of course you're doing some modules, which is a very interesting development. You probably know I did a survey called Research Administration as a Profession, and as part of that we gather the background, and research managers and administrators have academic background in absolutely every single area, and you can't just say, oh look, there's a big chunk of them over there, it's a pie chart and there's nothing sticks out, if you like. The important thing is that sort of flexibility, willingness to learn, an understanding of academia. If you're going to work in a university context, not all research managers work in universities, but most do, but particularly just an understanding of sort of, I suppose, the whole research ecosystem. But that's something that you build up over time, because again, it's not something that's normally taught, because it's a fairly kind of niche area. And again, I'm not sure if I answered the question, because I just started talking.
You did, totally. I wanted to add the question, like how you personally became an RMA, because you started in research, right?
Yeah, sort of. So yeah, I guess my history was I did an undergraduate degree, decided I wanted to be rich and famous. No, rich, famous, I don't know. Anyway, so five of us started a computer consultancy, so writing software for businesses. And this was in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. It turned out there were some other people in America, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, doing a similar sort of thing. And maybe just the weather was better. Maybe they were better. Who knows? So we did that for about 3 years. At the end, we just sort of closed down the company. We didn't make huge amounts of money, but, you know, we didn't lose any money either. So that was good. And I just applied for a job back at my old university because I saw it advertised. This was before the World Wide Web, so I was looking at newspapers. I know it's you don't understand that concept.
No, really. I'm Gen Z. No.
So I applied for a job as a researcher just because it was the people that I knew from the department. I went for a job with the old head of departments. Got interviewed for that. On my way out of the interview, I met my old my moral tutor. So. In those days, how old do I sound? At my university, you, as well as having lecturers, you would have a member of academic staff who was assigned, if you like, to be someone who would give you support in a non-academic way. So, you know, maybe they were there to talk to you if you had a problem, but you know, whatever it might be. So anyway, so my old moral tutor was there. He saw me coming out of the interview and said, "Simon, what are you doing?" "Oh, I've come from an interview." He goes, I've got a job. Do you want that?" And I thought, well, okay, that's a good job interview. maybe I should wait to find out if this one I've actually applied for. Anyway, I didn't get the one with the head of department. So, I went back to speak to Andrew and said, "Well, you know, I didn't get that, you know, so, you know, is this job going?" And yes, it was. So he had a temporary job working on a smallish UK project. But then there was a larger UK project coming up, which is collaborative. This was at the University of Durham back in 1990, I guess. So that was a three-year project. That was then followed by two European projects, again, all computer science. And so by the time he moved from Durham to Sunderland to become the head of this new research support office, which didn't exist before, so he was the head of the office of just himself. The projects moved. When the projects finished, he persuaded the university he needed an assistant. I applied for that actual interview this time, and that's how I became one. So it was basically by luck.
Yeah.
I came across someone that I'd sort of previously known, so worked for him, and then just wanted to carry on working for him because he was a great boss, and I carried on working for him until he left to become a deputy vice chancellor elsewhere. So yeah.
Okay.
So no real huge plan, just luck.
Just coincidence.
What is serendipity?
But it's also like that you had this flexibility you already talked about, because this kind of leads me to the next question. Like, this is probably one skill you need, or a soft skill. I wanted to know, like, what are the most important skills or valuable soft skills you need, or you needed in all those years?
Yeah, that's interesting. So I guess probably any and all. I've seen quite a few slides of people talking about what it takes to be a research manager, it quite often it's just a list of anything and everything. So you quite often get that sort of jack of all trades, if you like. But I guess what that means is that you need to have an understanding of everything, which is sort of a soft skill in itself, being able to see the overview, the bigger picture. Definitely flexibility. And I think also diplomacy is quite an important one. So you're quite often you have the university position or the funder position, and you have what the principal investigator wants or wants to do. And you've kind of got to bring those two things together to get a sort of a middle ground of what the solution might be. Yeah, so yeah, definitely flexibility. I would guess perseverance as well. You have to be good at working under pressure. Quite a lot of it is deadline driven. Also, some slides, not actually mine, show that humor is also really important, because you've got to have fun while you're doing your job as well.
Yeah.
If you wanted to nail me down to a single one, it would be communication.
Yeah, like it's a constant being in like dialogue with the researchers, with universities, funding programs or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to speak all these different languages, as it were, and you know, understand and be able to sort of translate between funder speak to university speak to PI speak.
Okay, that's interesting. How invested or personally involved would you consider yourself in projects? Like, for example, if it doesn't succeed, are you responsible or is it still like the researcher's fault?
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. So when I first started, I was working on projects. And so in effect, I was doing some research management administration work then, which was filling in the forms for the European Commission and so on. And some, you know, sometimes doing the calculations for the claims and so some of that post-award work. But I mean, you know, so in effect, working on a project is being post-award, but it's that post-award project management rather than just a post-award central finance. But one of the things I would be doing is writing the proposals for the next project, but that's very much at a local level. So for that research group, and one of the reasons why you're invested in doing that is because that's going to be your next job. So in that case, you're really, really invested in it. But for that sort of role, you're really, at that point, you're kind of half researcher, half research manager administrator. So you're obviously going to be invested in that. When I moved centrally, then yes, what I was doing it was, you know, doing that on behalf of other people, so helping support them. So for some of them, you know, it's just, it's a proposal. There's nobody directly involved in it other than the principal investigator. So if they get the funding, they do the research and that's great. Or it might be that they've already got a portfolio of projects and they have some staff and you know those staff. And so you're helping to try and get their next job as well. So in that case, you know, you do feel a bit of an investment in it. But more than that, it's just probably the content of the proposal and, you know, whether it's exciting, whether you actually, you know, buy into it. So I remember one project which I knew the principal investigator reasonably well, but we then worked quite a lot on the project, and I think I made some really valuable additions to that and how we could get sort of improve his chances of funding, and he would definitely say that he probably wouldn't have got that project without my input. So I didn't have anything to do with the project after it had started, but I was invested in it because I felt that you know, it was something that I had helped to create. So I always kept an eye on that project when it was running, and you know, we sort of went to some of the virtual workshops and things like that. So it wasn't wasn't a sort of a computing one. It wasn't anything that I had a background in. So it was just quite an exciting, interesting project.
Oh my gosh, this profession doesn't make sense to me at all. Like, this is just like no basic education, how to become an RMA, but you have to know like everything. It's a bit risky, but yeah, it's cool. Like,
you learn everything as you're doing it. Yeah.
It's new.
Well, because it's new, then you can actually make it the way you want it to be. So.
Yeah. Wow. Like, did you ever feel anxiety of doing something wrong?
I guess so. I mean, I've made mistakes. There are times when the proposal hasn't been submitted the way it should have been submitted, and that was my fault. On the other hand, things are always supposed to be checked by someone else, so it's never entirely my fault, I hope.
Okay, so you... Sorry.
Yeah, no. So yeah. But I mean, anxiety, I mean, there's a phrase, isn't there? I mean, you know, nobody died. If that piece of research didn't get funded, then, you know, there's an opportunity next time or the time after or something else would get funded. I guess if I worked in a medical hospital research institute, then maybe that, you know, I might think, well, actually, if this research didn't get happened, but you know, in general, you know, you're trying to do the best that you can, and in general, you know, a great job happens. But if you have to be a little bit sanguine about it, I mean, you know, even if that proposal had been submitted and as great as it possibly had been, it may not have been funded anyway because there might have been other better proposals from the university down the road. So, you know, so you never know.
So. First of all, it's just quite normal if a project doesn't get funded, it's not especially like your fault. And on the other hand, like, you work in a team, if I got it right, so you're not alone and can turn to somebody.
Yeah, so it depends. It's different all the time. I mean, I guess the average proposal success rate is about 1 in 4 or 1 in 5. Some funding schemes are a lot more competitive than that. Some of them it's about 1 in 100, and yeah, right, or even higher. When I first started, I was the only person in the research office. I wasn't on my own because I was always working with or for a principal investigator. So, they were supposed to be checking my stuff and I was supposed to be checking their stuff. So, and there's always, or almost always, an approval process. So it needs to be signed off and agreed by the head of department and by the institution as a whole. There are those checks and balances in there. But on the other hand, if the deadline is tomorrow and you need to get it in, then yeah.
Oh yeah, fun times. Okay. When you say that you have a direct contact, like right now or in the last years, to other RMAs, or were they like many RMAs at the end of your career?
Okay, right. So I see what you mean. So yeah. So when I first started, I was I was the only one, and it took me about 2 years, 3 years, I guess, to realize that there were other people in other universities doing the same job. It just hadn't occurred to me because that's how stupid I am. So, and then I can't remember exactly how it happened. I think I must have gone on a training workshop, and someone mentioned this thing called RAGNET, which was the name of the UK association at that time. So I know lots of research managers, administrators through that professional association route. So when I retired from Kent, I mean, the research services had a staff of about 25 people. So yeah, and that's nowhere near the biggest research office in the UK. Some of them have over 100.
That's so funny because I had no idea about this.
Yeah, well, neither did I before I became one. So
yeah. That's cool. So actually, I wanted to talk a bit more because you seemed interested in the whole RMA community. So you wrote an article with Stephanie mm-hmm. Scott about a worldwide survey about RMAs. I would love to talk about that. Like, first of all, what would you say was the main drive to create a study like that? Maybe you could just...
Interesting. The main drive, yes. I'm not sure if there was a main drive other than there was an opportunity. So I was invited to the annual conference in 2014, I think it was. Yes, must have been, in Washington. And they were just launching their research program. So this was the association funding research into research management. So I went to the workshop to find out more about it. And I thought, well, this sounds exciting and interesting. You know, I used to be a researcher. Maybe I could do some again research into the association. And I got speaking to one of their previous chairs, and she was saying that a bit like your question, we have sort of the skills. She said, well, you know, we always seem to need to try and get people who have a certificate in research administration, or they have their technical skills, they know about a particular funder. She says, but the skills that I find most valuable are those soft skills, the flexible skills. And she said, I wonder if everyone thinks that way. And I thought, well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Why don't we ask them? So in the end, Judy Fredenberg, she said, well, it sounds great, Simon, but I haven't got time to do this. And I just randomly met Stephanie at that same conference because we were both on Twitter. And then we happened to be sitting at the front of a session tweeting because they had chairs at the front for people tweeting so that you take good photos. So we got chatting, and then yeah, we decided to put in this proposal together, and that got funded. So it was like serendipity for being at the conference, going to that workshop, meeting Stephanie, getting on, putting the proposal in, and getting funded. So yeah, so it's like everything else in my life, unplanned.
But it worked out because it's so interesting. I really, really liked it. Melinda Fisher and I already talked about those 77% of female RMAs. Yep. But I also looked at like so many different demographics, for example, about the highest degree or the age mm-hmm. range, which is like pretty young, and everything is cool. How did you pick your categories or your What were you especially interested in?
So for that first survey, for that, well, it wasn't really called Wrap On, it was just called Wrap in those days because we didn't know it was going to be followed on. So yeah, we specifically designed it to answer two questions, one of which was this skills questions, which are more important, soft skills or hard skills? Spoiler alert, soft skills. But also to look at the demographics. So there had been some previous studies, but mainly just in America, looking at the proportion of people who identify as female or male, looking at the educational background. So we decided to expand it, and we tried to pick questions which would be useful for doing those kind of analyses of, well, do people who work in pre-award think that these sorts of skills are more important compared to those people working in post-award? So we asked them what areas they worked in. We also wondered if there were difference between males and females or people of different age ranges, as you say, and so on. So that's kind of how we developed that questionnaire. And you can take that data and do your own analyses.
Cool. I love it. I would love to talk more about this, but I think we are running out of time.
Okay. So I won't tell you about Wrap 2 and Wrap 3, but that's fine. We no problem.
So maybe just as a wrap-up question.
As a wrap-up question, I see what you did there.
I did that. And it's, why would you recommend a career in RMA to someone?
A number of reasons, I guess. One is, has anyone told you about the Bob Anderson book? No. So Bob Anderson was the president of Incura maybe 4 or 5 years ago now, and he wrote a children's book called The Best Job of All, which explains... it's basically a mother who's a research administrator trying to explain, or rather her child trying to explain what it is that their mother did as a role. And it was literally something different every day. So one day she'd be helping someone who was getting a NASA grant, and the next day she'd be helping someone who was trying to cure a disease or whatever it might be. So it was basically doing something different, something interesting every day. Keep you stimulated, and so that's it. So best job of all, because you're working with really clever people who in general are very happy to receive your support and help, and very thankful when they get funding for that. The universities are just generally great places to work, and again, should stress, not all research managers work in universities, just the majority of them. It keeps you stimulated. Part of the RAP survey was reasons why you stay a research manager. And the highest ones are, it's never boring, different every day, working with faculty, with principal investigators. So it's that sort of environment, if you like. The other thing is, it's still a developing profession, so you can make a difference. And I look forward to you being the next chair. Well, maybe not the next chair, maybe in 10 years. There are two German associations, so,
I'm going to become an RMA. Yeah. I feel like you get, workshops on how to advertise your profession. Everyone's like, oh, it's the best job ever. I'm so glad I took this opportunity. It's funny.
Well, it is interesting, because, you mentioned Belinda, and so she probably said that we're working on the third iteration of the RAP.